Hello and welcome to Hawks Talk on Tuesday the 11th of June 2024. My name is Bridget and I'll be compiling this week's edition in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen by Dee Sean and Leslie Cord and read by Jill Jones and Leslie Cord. We shall also hear two short poems read by Jenny. The copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Hawks Talk on your Alexa device. And at the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Hawks Talk online. Additionally, in case it's useful to you, the sunrise times this week will range from 4:46 on Monday 10th of June to 4:45 on Sunday 16th of June. And the sunset times this week will range from 9:23 on Monday 10th of June to 9:27 on Sunday the 16th of June.
Notice to listeners of Hawks Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Hawks Talk using Alexa. To listen to Hawks Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Hawks Talk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Hawks Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Hawks Talk and we will try to help.
A new summer timetable on the Great Western Railway network will deliver more trains where they are needed most. Direct services between Bristol Temple Meads and Oxford are planned to be restored for the first time in more than 20 years. In response to growth in demand for leisure travel, GWR will run two return Saturday services between the cities from September. The services will run from 14th of September through to 14th December as a pilot to assess demand, including on Saturdays of the Bath Christmas Market. The new timetable sees the return of the weekday super-fast services between London, Paddington and South Wales for the first time since March 2020, the doubling of noon capacity from London, Paddington and Plymouth, and additional services on the corridor between London, Paddington and Bristol Parkway, as well as additional services to summer holiday destinations.
A city transport company has issued a fresh warning that some bus stops will be closed at Oxford Rail Station until further notice due to concerns over trees which are causing diversions. The diversions started on Tuesday, May the 28th, as health and safety concerns were raised. Stagecoach Oxfordshire posted an announcement with a new warning for customers. The statement said, during this time, services 1 and 14 will not be able to serve the R2 to R4 bus stops. A date has not been confirmed for when the closures will end at this stage. A statement on the company's website adds, we've been told that due to health and safety concerns regarding the trees at the forecourt at Oxford Rail Station, some bus stops have had to close. Service 1 will drop off and pick up at a temporary bus stop at the end of the forecourt towards the exit. Service 14 will terminate at Frideswyde Square bus stop R8 and will depart from Frideswyde Square R7. We apologise for any inconvenience this may cause, albeit out of our control. A GWR spokesperson previously said, "The situation with tree roots causing damage to the pavement outside the station is worsening, so we have put measures in place for the safety of customers."
Public hire e-scooters will be available in Oxford until at least 2026, after the government confirmed the UK's e-scooter trial programme will continue. Oxfordshire County Council has extended its contract with Voi until the 31st of May 2026, after the UK trial was formally extended to the same date. Councillor Andrew Gant, Cabinet Minister for Transport Management, said, "It's wonderful to announce our great relationship with Voi is continuing for a further 2 years. We are delighted to be able to offer people greener, more flexible alternatives to the private car for moving around our historic city." Voi has been operating the e-scooter programme in Oxford since 2021, and there are now more than 850 e-scooters available for hire in the city, and they have been used to travel more than a combined 2.5 million miles, which is the equivalent of more than 100 times round the world. General Manager for Voi UK, James Bolton, said, "We are thrilled at the prospect of operating in Oxford for a further 2 years. It's been an amazing journey building up the scheme from a small beginning. In the last 3 years, we've seen increasing numbers of people benefit from using our e-scooters as a safe, affordable and sustainable way of travelling, which doesn't contribute to air pollution or clog up the streets with traffic."
Bleary-eyed Oxford householders were kept up into the early hours of the 5th of June as a police helicopter circled above their quiet residential street past midnight, leading to two arrests. A police helicopter, POL 381, could be heard and seen repeatedly circling above Cowley. Thames Valley Police confirmed this was due to a car chase that started in Grenoble Road when the suspects allegedly failed to stop for officers. A 44-year-old man from Oxford was arrested on suspicion of failing to stop when directed by a police officer, while a 33-year-old woman was arrested for the same reason. She was also arrested on suspicion of the possession of a knife in a public place. A Cowley resident who wished to remain anonymous told the Oxford Mail there was a significant police presence on Clive Road in Cowley. "I was woken just after midnight to the sound of a helicopter overhead," the homeowner said. "This does happen quite often in the Cowley area, but not normally this late at night. Soon after, I heard voices from the street and blue lights through the window. Sometimes we get ambulances pulling up, so I was concerned it might be a neighbour who was unwell, so I looked out of the window. Instead, it was a police car with police officers, raised voices, and clearly something was underway. Not long after, more police cars pulled up, including an unmarked silver four-wheel drive. In total, I'd say there were four or five vehicles and maybe a dozen police officers. The homeowner was kept awake for a while as the helicopter continued circling. I heard dogs further down the road, so thought they might be searching for someone," the eyewitness added. "This would explain the helicopter overhead, which seemed to be focused on our street. This went on for over an hour, and I was worried children might be awake and would be tired for school the next day. The helicopter overhead is really loud, particularly when you have bedroom windows open in the summer, and the police weren't making any effort to keep their voices low. When I looked out the window again, I saw they'd just put someone in the back of one of the police cars. It was after 1 a.m. when the police finally moved on and the vehicles left. We didn't hear the helicopter again. This sort of thing happens every now and again when you live in Cowley. It's part of living in an urban area, and in a way it's reassuring to know that there's a large police presence when needed. Both suspects remain in police custody at the time of writing."
An Oxford woman has been fined £300 after purchasing a stolen blue parking badge on the social media site Snapchat. Tasnim Al-Samad of Westminster Way in Botley illegally used a blue badge to park in Oxford city centre on September the 26th, 2023. When officers from Oxfordshire County Council's Council Counter Fraud Team checked the badge, they established that it had been reported stolen from the London borough of Hillingdon and seized it. The 21-year-old claimed at the time that the badge belonged to her friend who had been with her when she had parked. When later interviewed under caution, she admitted to having bought the badge from the social media platform Snapchat and said that no one was with her when she parked. Ms. Al-Samad appeared at a hearing at Oxford Magistrates Court yesterday and was found guilty of such offences. She was fined £300 plus a court charge of £120, and the County Council was awarded costs of £350. Mark Haynes, Director of Customer and Culture at Oxfordshire County Council, said, "People rely on their blue badges so that they can park near their workplaces, supermarkets and health facilities. Illegal use of the scheme denies a space to someone who really needs it. It's particularly concerning that the conviction involves the display of a stolen badge. It is not acceptable to misuse this service, and the recent enforcement operation shows that this council is taking action to stop the abuse. Inappropriate use of disabled parking bays can result in blue badge holders missing medical appointments, not being able to get out to buy food or to go to work. Every space really does matter. Blue badge misuse is a criminal offence and can result in a fine of up to £1,000 and a criminal record. A penalty charge notice will normally be issued to anyone misusing a disabled parking bay."
Brits will begin to notice a change in their wallets as notes featuring the King's portrait enter circulation, with a Woodstock post office among the first chosen places for the new currency. It is the first time the sovereign has been changed on the Bank of England's notes. The new notes will co-circulate alongside those featuring Queen Elizabeth II. However, people will only start to notice the new notes appear in their change very gradually. In line with guidance from the royal household, the new notes will only be printed to replace those that are worn and to meet any overall increase in demand. The portrait of Charles will appear on all four banknotes, the £5, £10, £20 and £50, with no other alterations to the existing designs. Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey said, "We're very pleased to be issuing the new King Charles banknotes. This is a historic moment, as it's the first time we've changed the sovereign on our notes. We know that cash is important for many people, and we're committed to providing banknotes for as long as the public demand them. Bringing these new notes into circulation is a demonstration of that commitment." Although the Bank of England started to produce banknotes in the 17th century, Charles's mother, Queen Elizabeth II, was the first British sovereign to be given the honour in 1960 on a £1 paper note. People will be able to snap up the new look currency at selected post office branches. The chosen post offices will initially have £5, £10 and £20 denominations of the new banknotes. Thousands of post offices will receive the new look currency over the coming days and weeks, including in Woodstock. Ross Borkett, banking director at the post office, said, "This historic launch of the new banknotes featuring King Charles III comes as we experience the highest levels of cash withdrawals and deposits in post office branches. We're pleased to be able to mark this day by giving people the opportunity to withdraw the new notes from our branches." While banknotes featuring Queen Elizabeth II remain legal tender and there is no need to exchange them, people who are interested to see the new banknotes can now get their hands on them. The Bank of England has put temporary facilities in place to allow people to obtain a limited number of the King Charles III banknotes. It has set up a postal exchange service running from June the 5th to 30th, up to a limit of £300 per customer. An application form and further details are on the Bank of England's website.
An Oxford Children and Young People's Hospice said it is so delighted following the announcement that Queen Camilla will continue as its patron. The announcement of the Queen's support for Helen Douglas House comes on the first anniversary of the coronation. Helen and Douglas House delivers care and support to families with terminally ill children in varied settings. It's hospice, hospitals and at home, 24 hours a day, every day of the year. The hospice also supports families through the grief that follows their child's death. Jane Long, Chief Executive of Helen and Douglas House, said, "We are so delighted the Queen will continue to be our patron, and I'm sure our families, staff and volunteers will also be thrilled to hear this news too. The Queen is very approachable and friendly when we meet her, and Her Majesty has a genuine interest in what we do and the families that we support, as well as our staff and volunteers and the vital role that they play. She shows great compassion for the work we do and to our families going through such difficult times. Her Majesty puts people at ease straight away and has a particular affinity with children. She always makes them smile and they love to talk to her. When we meet her, she wants to understand more about the challenges our families are facing and how we help them. Her Majesty's relationship with the Children's Hospice started in 2007, when, as the Duchess of Cornwall, she became patron for the first time. Throughout the past 17 years, a key feature of her patronage has been the annual tradition of inviting families and staff from the charity to decorate Clarence House's Christmas tree. The children get to choose decorations and decide where to place them on the tree. Some put up the decorations themselves, while others get assistance from the Queen's equerry using his sword. The day also features a lunch served by the Queen, a chance to meet reindeer, and renditions of Christmas carols by the Welsh Guards brass band. Over the years, the Queen has made several visits to the hospice, her most recent visit being to its newly developed hospice garden. Mrs. Long added, "Our visits to Clarence House and her visits to the hospice mean the world to all and create such wonderful memories for our families, in particular, to treasure forever. These visits also create a lot of media coverage, which helps to raise awareness of the charity, enabling us to provide vital support to local families with terminally ill children." Meanwhile, a five-a-side football tournament has raised thousands of pounds for the Oxford-based Children's Hospice. GHM Communications, a telecommunication and IT support firm based in Sutton Courtenay, hosted the charity tournament, which raised £4,500 for Helen and Douglas House. Businesses from across Oxfordshire took part in the tournament.
Japanese royals Emperor Naruhito and his wife Empress Masako are set to come to Oxford as part of their upcoming state visit. The Japanese state visit to the UK, hosted by the King, is to go ahead in a slightly adapted form despite the general election. In an unprecedented move, the King and Queen will entertain Emperor Naruhito and his wife, Empress Masako, from June the 25th to the 27th, just days before the country goes to the polls. On June the 27th, the pair will bid farewell to the King and Queen and privately visit St George's Chapel, Windsor Castle, to lay a wreath on the tomb of the late Queen before carrying out a private visit to Oxford on June the 28th. The major formal state occasion will include the traditional pomp and pageantry of a ceremonial welcome on Horse Guards Parade, a carriage procession and a grand banquet at Buckingham Palace. A palace spokesman said the programme had been slightly adapted, adding, "As a general principle, it has of course been adapted as a result of the current pre-election period of sensitivity." Missing elements from traditional state visits appear to be the usual Downing Street talks with the Prime Minister, a speech to the Palace of Westminster by the visiting head of state, and meetings with opposition leaders. There was no clarification from the Palace as to whether Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, Foreign Secretary Lord Cameron, Labour leader Sir Keir Starmer, and others would be invited to the white tie state banquet or attend other elements. Royal expert Joe Little of Majesty magazine said, "It's unprecedented. I assumed as soon as the election was announced that the state visit would bite the dust again because of the huge amount of prime ministerial and government involvement with it." He added, We do still have a Prime Minister, but the fact that it's a week before the general election is optically a bad fit. The powers that be could be accused of drawing undue attention to the Prime Minister of the day, so maybe there won't be the ministerial attendees there. State visits are planned by the Foreign Office in consultation with the Palace. The key event in the royal calendar is Charles's first incoming state visit since his cancer diagnosis. While William, the Prince of Wales, and Queen Camilla are scheduled to take part in the events, there was no mention of the Princess of Wales in the announcement from the palace. The princess is away from public duties while she undergoes chemotherapy for cancer. The Japanese state visit previously had to be postponed because of the COVID pandemic.
The company that created one of the first coronavirus vaccines, in partnership with the University of Oxford, has announced plans to nearly double its revenue. AstraZeneca wants to nearly double its revenue to $80 billion, or £62.8 billion, by 2030, ahead of a landmark investor meeting for the pharmaceutical giant. The FTSE 100 company will launch 20 new medicines over the coming years in areas like cancer care and rare diseases as part of a new era of growth. Chief Executive Pascal Soriot said many of the new products have potential to generate more than $5 billion a year and transform millions of lives. The medicines, combined with its existing portfolio, will help AstraZeneca hit the $80 billion turnover target from $45.8 billion last year, he said. He added, "The breadth of our portfolio, together with continued investment in innovation, supports sustained growth well past the end of the decade." It comes just under a decade after AstraZeneca announced a $45 billion annual target to help resist a takeover by rival Pfizer. In that time, AstraZeneca has become a household name for its part in developing the COVID-19 vaccines. The company's drug, called Vaxzevria, created alongside the University of Oxford, will be withdrawn from the market, it announced recently, amid falling demand and the development of new vaccines designed to fight specific COVID-19 variants.
Researchers at the University of Oxford have developed a new molecule that can suppress the evolution of antibiotic resistance in bacteria. The small molecule can also make resistant bacteria more susceptible to antibiotics. The global rise in antibiotic-resistant bacteria is one of the top global public health and development threats, with many common infections becoming increasingly difficult to treat. Some antibiotics, such as fluoroquinolones, work by damaging bacterial DNA, causing the cells to die. However, this damage can engage what is known as the SOS response, which repairs damaged DNA in bacteria and increases the risk of genetic mutations, which can accelerate the development of resistance to the antibiotics. OXF-077 has been found to suppress the SOS response, increasing the effectiveness of antibiotics against these bacteria. Jacob Bradbury, first author of the paper, said, "These findings suggest OXF-077 is a useful tool molecule to further study the effects of SOS response inhibition in bacteria and for the treatment of antibiotic resistance infections. Further work is needed to test the suitability of these molecules for use outside of lab settings and will form part of ongoing work between the INEOS Oxford Institute for Antimicrobial Research and Oxford's Department of Pharmacology to develop new molecules to slow and or reverse antibiotic resistance." The researchers studied a series of molecules previously reported to increase the sensitivity of a type of bacteria that usually lives harmlessly on the skin to antibiotics and to prevent this bacteria from developing an SOS response. The bacteria, called methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, MRSA, is resistant to all beta-lactam antibiotics such as penicillins and cephalosporins and can cause a serious infection that needs immediate treatment with antibiotics if it gets inside the body. Researchers modified the structure of different parts of the molecule and tested their action against MRSA when given with ciprofloxacin, a fluoroquinolone antibiotic. The response demonstrated OXF-077 to be the most potent SOS inhibitor molecule found to date. Dr. Thomas Lanyon-Hogg, principal investigator at Oxford's Department of Pharmacology, said this is a great example of what can be achieved through interdisciplinary collaboration.
Unipart, a Cowley-based firm, has announced it has launched operations in Saudi Arabia. The logistics, supply chain, manufacturing and consultancy company already has operations across Europe, North America, Australia and Japan. And now it's expanding in the Middle East, where it has operations in the United Arab Emirates. Country Director Tahir Malik will lead the expansion of Unipart's operations in Saudi Arabia, bringing more than 20 years' experience in logistics in the kingdom, including with key players in KSA. Unipart CEO Darren Lee said, "As a British company with a diverse international reach, working with leading global brands, Unipart is well positioned to offer our customers access to the rapidly growing supply chain economy in Saudi Arabia, which is undergoing a significant transformation as a major logistics hub between Europe, Asia and Africa." Unipart Country Director Tahir Malik brings 2 decades of experience of scaling supply chains and operations in Saudi Arabia, and we look forward to working with customers to best benefit from the government's considerable investment in diversifying the economy, growth, and boosting productivity.
A mental health team have won an Exceptional People Team Award in recognition of their work. Oxford City and North East Primary Care Mental Health Team scooped March's award for its high standard patient care. The team delivers adult and older adult mental health services through the newly established Keystone Mental Health Hub in Oxford and bridges the gap between primary and secondary mental health care. The team also acts as the gateway to mental health services for many Oxfordshire residents. Oxford City and North East Primary Care Mental Health Team were nominated by Assistant Business Manager for the Community Mental Health Transformation Team, Francesca Sisson, for the impact they have on their patients and the community. She said, "The team have received feedback from many patients about how the service they provide has renewed their trust in mental health services, and this is a goal they continue to work towards in everything they do." A number of patients have given positive feedback. One said, "You've given me some hope that I haven't felt for a while. Partly by validating the things I've felt and experienced, I'm not just making a fuss or overreacting, but also that I can rely on definitely being able to access treatment. Even if it's still another year or two, just knowing that option will be there, ready for me, is a huge relief. In a time where the NHS seems to get so much criticism, my experience with your team has been nothing but positive, and I am so grateful." Another said it was the fastest support I have ever received, while one patient said, "Thank you for listening. I have always been scared speaking up for myself, but now I want to speak up to get the best for myself, and I'm able to do that." Recently, the team have moved locations, but have provided uninterrupted care while doing so. The team strives to minimise the stigma around mental health while making its services as accessible as possible for everyone in the community. They aim to ensure that every patient receives the right care on their first visit, which is particularly important for their patients, who are often vulnerable. Every team member listens with empathy and kindness, using their personal mental health experiences to make patients feel understood and safe. By sharing their experiences, patients create relationships and trust with the mental health team. They also share insights and guidance with other teams across the Trust's mental health services, engaging in learning opportunities to improve their services. Dementia support sessions designed with the help of people living with the condition have been launched across Oxfordshire. These sessions have been created by Dementia Oxfordshire, a service offered by Age UK Oxfordshire, alongside a group of individuals living with dementia. They aim to provide recently diagnosed individuals with educational resources. The Experts by Experience group has also worked with the Dementia Oxfordshire team to produce a new booklet entitled A Straightforward Guide to Dementia. The guide is given out free at the education sessions and can be downloaded from the Dementia Oxfordshire website. Melissa Spearman, Dementia Oxfordshire's education lead, said, "Being told you have dementia can be a really difficult time, and we wanted to show people that there are lots of ways to live well with dementia. One of the most important lessons we learned from our Experts by Experience group was that people with a diagnosis need time to talk, and sharing experiences is a vital step to feeling that you are not alone. We also use the expertise of people who are living with dementia, as well as the lived experience of their carers, to include practical examples of how to make life easier, whether that's using simple memory prompts, rearranging the kitchen so everyday tasks are easier, or utilizing technology to help. But perhaps even more importantly, we encourage people with a dementia diagnosis to recognise the fact that they are still the same person they were, to encourage them to stay as independent as possible, and to talk openly about what they're going through." Glenn Fletcher, a long-standing member of the Experts by Experience group, was diagnosed with dementia 4 years ago. He delivers the post-diagnostic sessions alongside Dementia Oxfordshire's advisers. He said, "The best advice I can give anyone who is living with dementia is don't be too hard on yourself. It's too easy to pull yourself down and think, I'm not what I was. Having dementia means you just have less capacity to do certain things. You'll do things like before, but not quite the same. Peripheral elements may be missing, but don't be too frightened by that." Karen Fuller, Oxfordshire County Council's Director of Adult Social Care, added, "The new sessions are delivered by people who have extensive experience of dementia and are well placed to give relevant, clear advice and support at a time when people need it most."
A rare first edition copy of former Oxford Professor J.R.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit has tripled its estimate at auction to sell for more than £31,000. The 87-year-old copy was one of the only 1,500 first edition first impressions ever published on September the 21st, 1937, and has been found gathering dust in a drawer. The children's fantasy novel, which includes black and white line illustrations by Tolkien himself, was found tucked away in a chest of drawers at a house in Berkshire. Its owner had no idea of its value or rarity, as she had inherited it from a family member, and so she was left shocked to discover it could be worth thousands of pounds. The famous book, which follows the adventures of Bilbo Baggins, was expected to fetch between £7,000 and £10,000 when it went under the hammer on Friday of last week. It exceeded expectations, having been sold for a total of £31,200 at Kingham's Auctioneers in Moreton-in-the-Marsh. The book also featured a manual correction on the rear inner flap of the dust cover for Dodgson. This refers to Charles Dodgson, a fellow Oxford Don who is better known by his pen name of Lewis Carroll and was the author of Alice in Wonderland. A spokesperson for the auctioneers said, "George Allen and Unwin published the first edition on the 21st of September 1937 with just 1,500 copies. These sold out by December. It's illustrated in black and white by Tolkien, who also designed the dust cover." The auctioneer's spokesperson explained that during the war, the book was unavailable due to paper rationing. On the first edition, first impression, there is a manual correction on the rear inner flap for Dodgson, better known as Lewis Carroll. Collectors and enthusiasts drive the market for rare first editions, with auction prices ranging from £6,000 to over £20,000. It was found by one of our valuers in a lady's house in Berkshire on a routine home visit. The novel is set in Middle Earth and first introduces the character of the hobbit Bilbo Baggins and the One Ring that would feature again in the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
A University of Oxford professor who lectured in a cockroach costume has reacted to an infestation of the creatures at a local service station. Tim Coulson is the head of the University of Oxford's biology department and gave a talk at the Sheldonian Theatre dressed in the costume. The zoology professor was reading a section of Franz Kafka's The Metamorphosis, in which a character wakes one morning to discover he has turned into a giant insect. Professor Coulson's costume stunt oddly came on the same day that news broke out of a cockroach infestation at the M40 Oxford Welcome Break services. Food outlets on site, including KFC, Chopsticks and Starbucks, were shut down after a hygiene emergency prohibition notice was issued by South Oxfordshire District Council. The outbreak of cockroaches at the M40 services is unfortunate, said Professor Coulson. Cockroaches can spread diseases, so it's a sensible precaution to shut the affected businesses until the infestation has been dealt with. The infestation does mean there was plenty of food for the roaches to eat, which does, of course, make one question whether adequate hygiene standards were in place. The professor also gave some expert facts about the species which have infested the Oxford service station near Wheatley. Cockroaches are remarkable animals, added Professor Coulson. There are over 4,000 species of cockroach, but less than 50 are associated with human habits, and only a few species are considered pests. Some species can survive extremes of temperature, living in icy environments by making a form of antifreeze. However, most species live in the tropics. A criminal investigation into any food hygiene offences committed at the services is ongoing, and the three stores will remain closed until officers deem the health risk has been removed.
The next president of an Oxford University college has said he wants to encourage its community to use its talents to make a positive contribution to the world. Trinity College has appointed Sir Robert Choate, who will take up the role from September 1st, 2025. He said, "I'm delighted and honoured to be joining Trinity as its 29th president. I share the college's commitment to being forward-thinking and encouraging its community to use its talents to make a positive contribution to the world. I look forward enormously to working with fellows, staff, students and alumni to ensure that we continue to thrive and develop as a centre of academic excellence, a supportive, vibrant and inclusive community and a valued contributor to public life." Sir Robert will succeed Dame Hilary Balding, who has held the role since August 2017. She said, "It has been the most extraordinary privilege to serve as Trinity's president. I wish Sir Robert success and personal fulfilment in equal measures as he leads the college through to the next chapter of its development." Sir Robert has previously been Director of the Institute for Fiscal Studies and Chair of the Office for Budget Responsibility.
An Oxford vet has taken part in a blockade at the nation's largest private jet airport, with climate activists blocking three main gates. Dr. Jessica Upton is a veterinary surgeon and foster carer from Oxford, and said private airports were an abomination. Extinction Rebellion, that's XR, climate activists blocked access to Farnborough Airport in Hampshire to protest against the increasing use of highly polluting private jets by the super rich. The group has called on the government to ban private jets, tax frequent flyers, and make polluters pay. An XR spokesperson said the blockade was part of a global week of action against private aviation under the banner Make Them Pay, with actions in Denmark, Germany, Mexico, Norway, Sweden, Switzerland and the US, and follows Europe's largest private jet convention, EBACE, in Geneva. Farnborough Airport was targeted because it's the UK's largest private jet airport, and it is seeking planning permission to increase the number of planes taking off and landing. Dr. Upton of Oxford said, Expanding Farnborough would be putting the indulgent wants of the rich minority over the needs of the majority. Local people need cleaner air and less noise pollution, and the world's population urgently needs rapid reductions in greenhouse gas emissions to survive. Private airports disproportionately contribute to climate breakdown, and closing them would boost our chances of sticking to the Paris Climate Accords, the supposedly legal binding international treaty agreed to and signed by our government. Last year, 33,120 private flights landed and took off from Farnborough Airport, with an XR spokesperson saying there was an average of just 2.5 passengers per flight, making them up to 40 times more carbon intensive than regular flights. The spokesperson continued, "Currently, 40% of flights to and from the airport are empty." The airport is now seeking planning permission to increase the number of planes taking off or landing from a maximum of 50,000 a year to up to 70,000 a year. Protesters barricaded the airport's Gulfstream gate with an XR pink boat with "Love in Action" painted on the side, with four protesters locking themselves to oil drums at Ivley Gate, while an activist mounted a tripod blocking the entrance. XR said a fourth group of protesters had played cat and mouse with the airport authorities, moving between the airport's other gates to block them. Protesters released colourful smoke flares, chanted slogans, and engaged with members of the public, while joined by an XR drumming band called Rebel Rhythms. XR claimed that, despite Farnborough Airport branding itself as a centre for business aviation, around 50% of flights headed to the Mediterranean during summer months rather than business locations.
Roadside grass cutting is due to start this month as part of the council work to support biodiversity. Oxford's grass verge cutting schedule was updated earlier this year in response to feedback from residents and budget decisions announced by both the city and county councils. The current approach sees roadside grass verges in Oxford being cut twice a year to prevent encroachment on footpaths or cycleways. ODS, which carries out the work on behalf of Oxford City Council, will be mowing the roadside grass verges throughout the whole of June, starting on June the 5th, subject to weather conditions. A second cut is then expected to take place in September. The council cannot provide specific dates for when certain locations and roads will be cut. However, all work on the first cut is expected to be completed by the end of July. Writing about the grass cutting, Oxford City Council wrote, "Grass verges that are cut regularly might be perceived as neater. However, they do not create the best environment for plants and wildlife to thrive. Wildlife needs a variety of different habitats and food sources, including a range of grasses, wildflowers, and other vegetation maintained at different lengths throughout the year. The exception to cutting roadside grass verges twice a year will be 8 Oxford roads that formed part of the council's original no-mow pilot, where the evidence showed that there was an increased biodiversity from a single cut. And in these areas, the verges will be mowed once a year in September and the cuttings collected. The City Council will also continue to cut grass verges near junctions and pathways all year round to ensure safety and visibility for road users and pedestrians."
Oxfordshire's oldest golf club is bucking the national trend by increasing its membership base in response to oversubscribed winter competitions. Located on Hilltop Road in Cowley, Oxford Golf Club has observed a substantial influx of new members since the start of the year, following its Harry Colt centenary celebrations last summer. The club's membership surge is defying national trends, with Golf England reporting 15,000 fewer members across English golf courses this month compared to the same time in 2022. Founded in 1873, Oxford Golf Club was the original club of Oxford University. The rise in membership comes after several upgrades, including a large investment in its greens, the introduction of a state-of-the-art irrigation system, and a waste-to-water facility. Steve Greenwood, General Manager at Oxford Golf Club, said, "We're really pleased to see membership to continue to rise at the club, despite an inevitable drop in playing numbers nationally following an extraordinary period of growth for golf. Conditions on the course have unquestionably contributed to our positive start to the year, with members now experiencing the benefits of our investment into improving playing conditions thanks to the work of our greenkeeping team. We've also placed a strong focus on bolstering our winter societies and making the club a welcoming place to players, old and new, while continuing to deliver good value for money through our visitor green fees. Despite one of the wettest periods on record, the club has kept its 18 holes, designed by golf architect Harry Colt, operational through the winter and spring. Mr. Greenwood believes this is due to the course's sandy loam base, which enables good winter drainage and the introduction of rope drainage technology on the course's greens. This technology is a steel mesh wrapped in fiberglass, which channels water through a narrow tube without gravitational support. He said providing a quality playing surface all year round is our biggest priority. Despite the persistent rain, our course has been completely functional this year, which we're very proud of. Members now expect 12 months of golf for their annual membership. With winter supposedly becoming wetter, play all year round on clay-based courses isn't possible, so we are at a huge advantage regarding the quality of our course in all seasons. He added, "We're looking forward to a busy few months as the season gets into full swing soon with a number of charity events, newly promoted Oxford United's annual golf day in September, and our 125th anniversary celebrations of Oxford City Club in August, all planned for."
Oxford United could find themselves on free-to-air TV next season, as they also get set for a larger slice of the broadcast deal between the Football League and Sky Sports. It has been announced that ITV and Sky Sports have reached an agreement in principle, which will allow fans in the UK to watch free-to-air coverage of Sky Bet Championship fixtures, plus Carabao Cup ties. That deal will start in January, beginning with the Carabao Cup semi-finals and run through until the end of the 2026-27 season. It will see ITV jointly broadcast a select number of games also available on Sky Sports, with ITV set to simultaneously show 10 championship games a season. 5 matches will be broadcast in the second half of the season when the deal comes into play, including the option to select games from League One or League Two. Trevor Birch, Chief Executive Officer of the Football League, said in a statement, "We're delighted to continue a long-standing relationship with ITV in partnership with Sky Sports to deliver an added showing of the best of EFL to a wider audience. We want EFL to be accessible to as many audiences as possible, and this extra offering, with no additional subscription required, only enhances our reputation. I'd like to thank both organisations for their ongoing support and genuine commitment to all EFL competitions." The deal follows the mammoth £935 million struck between the Football League and Sky Sports, which will see more than 1,000 matches broadcast live every season from next year. The 5-year contract will see all 72 Football League teams featured more than 20 times a season.
Oxford Bus Company welcomed a special guest to its Cowley depot this month ahead of the launch of a citywide art trail. Roxy, a sculpture set for an appearance at Ox Trail 2024, is expected to engage thousands of tourists and residents when the trail starts on Saturday, July the 6th. The visit was part of Oxford Bus Company's support of the free event that will display life-sized and mini oxen sculptures, all uniquely designed, across the city this summer. After the 8-week citywide event, each sculpture will be auctioned off, with all proceeds going directly to Sobel House Hospice. The charity provides palliative care and support to around 3,000 adult patients a year, as well as their families, friends and carers. Luke Marion, Oxford Bus Company Managing Director, said, "Ox Trail is a really exciting event, which we are hoping will encourage people to enjoy exploring Oxford City this summer."
A medieval treasure has gone on display at Oxford's Ashmolean Museum. The museum is exhibiting the 14th century painting known as the Wilton Diptych. The painting, which illustrates King Richard II being presented to the Virgin and Child by his patron Saint John the Baptist and St Edward and St Edmund, forms part of the National Treasures event. It will encompass 12 simultaneous displays around the country, all in celebration of the National Gallery's 200th anniversary. Until September the 1st, the diptych will feature in the Museum's England 400 to 1600 Gallery, marking the first time this painting has been loaned out by the National Gallery since its acquisition in 1929. The function of the display is to enhance understanding of the work by reconceptualising it in a new setting. The diptych, a highly technical painting on two oak panels hinged together, was created by an unknown artist between 1395 and 1399. It existed as a portable, small devotional object which originally belonged to King Richard II and is an extraordinary survival from the Middle Ages. In the painting, Richard II is presented to the heavenly court on the right side, where the Virgin Mary cradles the Christ child, surrounded by angels. The left wing of the painting features an earthly setting, with the king being presented by the saints in a flower meadow with a flag held by an angel. The exterior of the left panel carries King Richard's personal armorial, while the opposing wing presents a white hart lying on a bed of flowers. The diptych will be displayed among other collections with the England Gallery, shedding light on and contextualising the work for visitors. In proximity to the diptych, visitors will encounter other historical exhibits, like the funeral pall of Henry VII and a gold reliquary ring, a significant piece of jewellery from around Richard's passing in 1400, discovered in Thame, Oxfordshire. A specially created audio tour will assist patrons in interacting with the painting and other collections within the museum. Dr. Zahar Sturgis, director of the Ashmolean Museum, said, "The Wilton Diptych is one of the National Gallery's greatest treasures, and it is a huge honour for the Ashmolean to be the first institution ever to borrow it. Setting it within the museum's England Gallery means the two greatest icons of English medieval kingship, the Alfred Jewel and the Wilton Diptych, will share a space for the first and last time." An Oxford woman joined Love Islanders Chris Hughes and Naz Majid, alongside TikTok sensation Sarah Gordon, on a visit to the deepest underground toilet in Britain. Kelly Flaherty from Oxford and Julie Dan from Berkshire joined the celebrities on the journey to North Wales after they entered a competition run by the cleaning brand Domestos. The toilet is hidden in a cavern 1,375 feet underground in an abandoned slate mine in the heart of Snowdonia. The adventure last month included navigating dimly lit caves, wading through knee-deep water, scaling sheer rock formations, and abseiling down a steep drop, all to discover the secluded toilet. Mr. Hughes said, "This descent has blown my mind. I didn't think we'd have to face obstacles quite like it." Ms. Flaherty added, "This whole challenge with Domestos was brutal, but in the best way possible. Spending a night underground? That's a story I'll be telling for years to come. Talk about defying expectations. Not many people can say they've done that." Love Island returned for its 11th series on Monday night, with Maya Jama back as the host of the ITV reality dating show, and Ian Stirling once again taking the role of the narrator. The new summer series comes off the back of the first ever Love Island All Stars, which concluded back in February with Molly Smith and Tom Clare declared the winners. The couple were voted the winners in the final, ahead of Callum Jones and Jess Gale, second, Sophie Piper and Josh Ritchie, third, and Georgia Steele and Toby Aroma-Laren, fourth. ITV has already confirmed there will be a second series of Love Island All Stars, which will air in 2025. While the All Stars series was filmed in South Africa, the new summer series of Love Island will once again return to the Insta-worthy villa in Mallorca. Jess Hayes of Oxford was the winner of the first series of the show. Domestos brand manager Rachel Rose said, "With the longest drop, we took the hardest to reach toilet concept to the next level, getting Chris Hughes and two members of the public to flush their fears and take the plunge into the unknown." Chipping Norton comic genius Ronnie Barker's antique shop sign has been sold at auction for £1,430. When the late comedian finally retired from showbiz in 1987 at the age of 58, he and his wife Joy turned their hand to becoming antiques dealers. Opening a shop called The Emporium in Chipping Norton High Street to follow his passion for antiques in 1989, he quipped, "I lose money every week, but it's a hobby. It's cheaper than skiing and safer at my age." Eubanks Auction Centre in Guildford offered the Emporium's 330x38cm shop sign in its May 30th Entertainment and Memorabilia Premier Live Auction, with an estimate of £500 to £1,000. The Consignor bought the sign at an auction in the 1990s, as part of a collection when the antique shop was sold. The family of the late comedian moved from Bedford to Oxford and bought a house at 23 Church Cowley Road in 1935 when he was 5 years old.
A hotel has won an award recognising its sustainability efforts for the second year running. Voco Oxford Thames in Sandford secured the IHG Environment and Sustainability Impact Award for its continued commitment to lowering its carbon footprint. Wendy Proctor, General Manager at Voco Oxford Hotels, said, "Delighted to take this award home for the second year running. Responsible business practices are essential now and for the future, and we're thrilled to be acknowledged for our efforts as we continually strive to improve." The hotel was the first Voco hotel in the UK to install solar panels for clean energy production. 60 panels were installed above the kitchen and one of the hotel suites. They generate power that emits no greenhouse gas emissions and reduces some types of air pollution. In 1 month, the solar panels produced 1.5 megawatts of energy, equivalent to saving 17 trees from deforestation. Over 20 to 25 years, they are projected to produce enough energy to power a significant part of the hotel's food and beverage operations, while the project is expected to pay for itself within 40 months. The hotel team also planted fruit trees and carried out litter picks, removing more than 100 kilograms of waste from the area.
An exciting new music festival is coming to Oxford this month, with an emphasis on new music, relaxed concerts and creative programming. Directed by composer Sebastian Black and cellist Eliza Millett of the Achaia Quartet, the festival will be held at Christ Church Cathedral on June the 22nd. Alongside music, visitors will be able to enjoy food from Damascus Rose Kitchen, an Oxford-based social enterprise for refugee women. The co-director, Mr. Black, said, "We are thrilled that we'll be joined by some of the most exceptional musicians around today, and we are so excited to welcome them into our smorgasbord community." Composer and clarinetist Mark Simpson is artist in focus, presenting a dazzling array of musical treats for us, ranging from his own work to a performance of Messiaen's sublime Quartet for the End of Time. We are also delighted to feature violinist Charlotte Spruit, who performs a concert devoted to the music of the German Baroque. Anyone who has had the thrill of seeing Charlotte perform this music before will know that we are in for something full of detail, gorgeous imagination and spontaneity. Most important for us at Smorgasbord is that our concerts have a wonderful sense of joyous community about them.
Three Wetherspoon pubs in Oxford are set to reintroduce the chain's brunch burger to mark Father's Day. The burger will be available from June the 14th to 16th at the Four Candles and the Swan and Castle and the William Morris in Cowley. The brunch burger features a British beef patty, American-style cheese, maple-cured bacon and a free-range fried egg, and is topped with a hash brown made from British potato. Priced at £7.73 with a soft drink and £9.26 with an alcoholic beverage, customers will have a choice of more than 150 drinks, including regional craft beers. The William Morris pub manager, Craig Bargus, said, "I am confident that the pub's customers will welcome the return of the brunch burger."
An event to celebrate the 10th anniversary of a popular car festival is set to be held in Bicester. Haggerty has announced its third 2024 hangout evening to celebrate 10 years of its festival of the unexceptional. The hangout, open to anyone who drives a basic spec car, regardless of age, is taking place at the Haggerty Clubhouse, located in Bicester Heritage, on Tuesday, June the 11th. Tickets will cost £5 per car, and visitors are encouraged to bring their friends and family along. A selection of food and drink will be available, along with the first chance to see the new 2024 Festival of the Unexceptional merchandise. The car deemed to be the most unexceptional of the night will be awarded a detailing kit. Mark Roper, Managing Director of Haggerty International, said, "2024 celebrates 10 years of the Haggerty Festival of the Unexceptional, and this pre-event party allows Festival of the Unexceptional fans to get the chance to get an early preview of the event merchandise, as well as hearing what cars will be on the concourse before anyone else. The Festival of the Unexceptional celebrates everyday classic cars and showcases the ordinary classic cars of the 70s, 80s and 90s. It remains the only event in the world that celebrates everyday cars in a traditional classic car concourse setting, and will take place at Grimsthorpe Castle in Lincolnshire on July the 27th.
A four-legged friend is looking for a new family after spending more than 2 years in rescue since when he was a puppy. The dog called Harley first came into care to the National Animal Welfare Trust, NAWT, at 6 months old after an extremely rough start to life. NAWT oversees rehoming in Oxfordshire, Berkshire, Hampshire and Wiltshire. A spokesman said, "Harley has never experienced a loving home and is desperate to find compassionate and caring owners." The team said, "Despite some ongoing behavioural needs, Harley has come a long way and has even made several dog friends around the rescue, including centre supervisor Taryn Beaumont's own dog, Mr. Goose." Mr. Beaumont said, "Harley is an extremely intelligent and affectionate boy. He's a real people pleaser and gets so wiggly when he is rewarded for positive behaviour. He just loves to please you. He is so sweet-natured." Ms. Beaumont said the team were lucky to have the skills of the animal care assistants with a wealth of knowledge and experience between us. She said the team have worked very closely with Harley to truly understand why he displays the behaviour he does. "If you don't understand why a dog is displaying a behaviour in the first place, you'll never truly correct it. You will just be managing it, which isn't something we've been aiming for with Harley. Harley's ideal home would need to be loving and patient people who can help to provide a structured day for him. Harley really thrives once he has learnt your routine, and here at NAWT we will provide whoever is lucky enough to rehome him with all the tools and knowledge they need to ensure his next home is his last. Despite a tough journey for the adorable mutt, the team are sure there is a right home out there for Harley. The staff are appealing for help to find Harley the perfect home he deserves. Harley has been at the centre for more than 4 months now and has been through multiple vet checks to ensure he's healthy. Anyone who wishes to contribute to the centre, helping to cover both the cost of animal care and continuing the great work of the charity, can donate directly to the centre via post, phone on 01488 638 584 or their website. The public can also visit the centre from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Wednesday to Monday to see all the wonderful work and effort that goes into everything they do.
And finally, a story with a happy ending. A pet tarantula found in Wallingford has been safely reunited with its owner after being missing for 3 weeks. Charlotte the spider was safely returned to her owner, 7-year-old Theo Kiriakou, after an appeal on Facebook. Commenting on the post, Theo's dad, Charlie Kiriakou, said, "I can't believe you found her. Thank you so much for getting her safe." Mr. Kiriakou described his son's reaction to Charlotte being found as over the moon. He added, "We've just got back in town and everyone is asking us about her. Charlotte is 1.5 years old and we've had her since she was the size of a 5p coin as a little spiderling." Charlotte disappeared after Theo left the feeding hatch open. Jordan Hammond, who lives in the town, said her friend Paige had found Charlotte on her way to work in the Goldsmith Lane car park. She noticed that the traffic was stopping and that there was a tarantula on the road, so she quickly hopped out and secured the spider in her takeaway cup. Ms. Hammond said, "When she phoned to tell us, we didn't believe her to start with. I didn't believe it. Luckily, a few people knew the spider belonged to a little boy from the pub and they knew it was missing."
I am so glad to hear that. It is certainly a happy ending. Well, that is everything for articles, and now Jenny will read 2 short poems for you.
I would like to share with you a couple of poems written by Spike Milligan, the Irish comedian, writer, musician, poet, playwright, and actor. The first is entitled Smile. Smiling is infectious. You catch it like the flu. When someone smiled at me today, I started smiling too. I walked around the corner and someone saw me grin. When he smiled, I realised I had passed it on to him. I thought about the smile and then realised its worth. A single smile like mine could travel round the earth. So if you feel a smile begin, don't leave it undetected. Start an epidemic and get the world infected. The second poem is entitled Love Song. If I could write words like leaves on an autumn forest floor, what a bonfire my letters would make. If I could speak words of water, you would drown when I said I love you.
Thank you, Jenny. I am smiling now. Are you, listeners? That was everything for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret at 07496-062280. This is 07496-062280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on Alexa device through the Talking Newspaper skills. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.